So I'm waiting for this this bus in Lower Queen Anne yesterday.
This was yesterday.
Yeah, I had about 15 minutes between buses.
This is in Seattle.
In Seattle, Washington, and I went into a Safeway store to get a couple things just to kill time. And when I was leaving, this elderly woman was walking in front of me, really slowly. She was a normal, maybe a slightly dotty senior citizen, but uh-huh. You know, able to get out in the world and shop and walk very slowly with
sure.
their groceries.
And you were trapped behind her.
And she just went at this very slow pace, and she was humming to herself very faintly.
Uh-huh.
And I just figured this was another one of those seminars in patience that I keep getting signed up for. So uh-huh. I inevitably caught up with her because I couldn't walk as slowly as she was, and I got to hear what she was singing, and this is what it was. Spider-Man, 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 Spider-Man. Just over and over and over again.
Uh-huh. Did she seem cognizant of the world around her?
I think she was in a better place than I was.
Uh-huh. I should say.
But I just wondered, you know, at what point...
Grandma's in a better place now,
yeah,
son.
She's in Spider-Man land. And I just wondered if it was... if there was just like all across the United States, like a distinguished-looking elderly man with wattles is uh-huh. raking his yard.
Spider-Man. It's sort of like the invasion of the body snatchers.
Yeah. A Catholic priest is putting his sermon together. Uh-huh. And Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
Like there's a big conga line.
Trailing down the street. Mm-hmm. I would like to see that. I definitely would like to see that.
And you know, I thought, boy, 20, 30 years from now, I'll be joining that line.
That's something to look forward to.
Spider-Man.
No doubt about it. Well, folks, if Frank nods off during the broadcast today, there's a very good reason. He and his graphic novel partner, David Lasky, just put the finishing touches on their graphic novel about the Carter family, soon to be published by Abrams Books.
Mm-hmm. And come out in October.
Did you guys get any sleep at all while you were finishing that up?
Yeah,
what was the page count David had to meet in those final weeks?
It was a lot. It was over 100 pages.
And was he averaging like 2 pages a day? What was the aim?
The golden goal was 2 pages a day. And we just had various setbacks. You know, it just seemed like every time we would get going, something would go, whoa, stop. And we'd have to stop and regroup ourselves. But he delivered the goods, and I know he had to pull some all-nighters, and I mostly would just, on the coloring end, I was working, like, it was about 3 weeks where I did 16-hour days every day.
Well, you came and sat with me after my gallbladder operation here in my apartment, and the whole time you were up into the wee hours of the morning working on finishing the coloring.
Yep.
While I moaned softly and tried to keep my cat from jumping on my stomach.
Yep. I did a lot of coloring.
Uh-huh. You built a cat protection device
yeah.
for me,
mm-hmm.
which I was very appreciative of.
Some simple cardboard and a little bending here, a twist there, and yeah. voila.
Cat couldn't get at me.
It's cat frustrator.
Uh-huh. The studio that Frank and David set up, it was in what neighborhood?
Kind of the Woodland Park area near the Seattle Zoo.
And didn't it get hot in there during the...
Oh, yeah.
The summertime?
So yeah.
You were basically working in an oven during the summer, and it was a tiny little room, but you'd set up your big drawing table that David had inherited.
And which he's since passed on to another cartoonist.
Oh, that's nice.
And we had a Mac computer that a friend of David's had donated to the project, which was helpful.
And there were pieces of David's art strewn all over the place. There was one page from a Harvey Pekar story he was working on that seemed to set on one side table forever. Because
yeah.
you guys kept getting sidetracked on other projects. You actually finished a completely different book in the middle of working on the Carter family book.
Yeah, we had to put the brakes on the Carter family book because we were trying to see if we could get the rights to quote the song lyrics
Which you never got, right?
Yeah, that just kind of...
These aren't public domain?
It's a long story. There was no ill will or anything.
Was it lawyers?
I think it was lawyers and...
They wanted a part of the millions you guys are going to earn from this project, am I right?
Oh, I'd like a part of the millions that we're going to earn from this project. Uh-huh. Thousands even, I'll tell you. We waited around for a year or so for them to reply, and they never did, and then we were...
This couldn't have been anything but good for their music sales.
I'd like to think so, too. I just, you know, and I feel... The thing that's frustrating to me is that some of the descendants of the Carter family would be getting part of this money.
Well, of course.
And
an interesting thing to me is that the constraints put on you because of this made you and David invent some very interesting approaches to conveying the music, magic of the music that the Carter families did.
Yes, and I honestly have to give David full credit for that. I mean, those were his innovations, and they're just wonderful
things. They're really beautiful. People will see what I'm talking about when it happens.
There's, just so many things in that book that came right out of David's head.
It captures a sort of transcendence that I don't know if you could have gotten by just quoting lyrics.
Yeah, we're actually...
You use color and the language of comics to get it across instead.
And we're better off for it. There were a couple of spots where it would have really been lovely to have the song lyrics, but...
Well, and this is coming with a CD... With the music on it, isn't it?
Well, it's a CD of some of the recordings the Carter family made when they were working for a Texas border radio station in the late 30s.
Uh-huh.
And we couldn't get the cost for using the studio recordings was just really prohibitive. But we were able
Well, still, this is like almost more authentic, isn't it? To have these raw recordings.
You get to hear the announcer. There's a wonderful rambling spiel that the announcer gives that I reproduced verbatim in the graphic novel.
Oh, is that so? You guys had heard all of this before?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And we got to.
So these are recordings of those sessions that you picture in the book.
There's one moment in the book what we were able to quote the lyrics because there's a couple, but particularly one where AP is playing and singing this song called "One Little Word." Was actually a Tin Pan Alley song copyrighted in 1899.
That's a crucial dramatic movement in the book, too. Mm-hmm.
And
it's really well written, and it's beautifully drawn. It's just an ideal combination. You guys have the language of comics just down cold.
It
moves like a beautifully... I hate to compare comics to movies because they're a different thing. Comics are not movies. Comics are not books. Comics are not just pictures. They're exactly what they are, which is what... makes them so fascinating. They do this, they put your brain in a place that it doesn't go to in any other medium.
Yeah, I sometimes when trying to describe comics that are not muscular guys in underwear hitting each other.
Great with elaborate Photoshop gradients on their thews.
I describe these kind of comics as movies on paper.
Uh-huh.
And again, you know,
or Photoshop porn is another.
Well, one. I'm talking about real, like, good comics.
Okay. Oh, good. Good.
Not the Photoshop porn, but you know, books like you know, alternative comics, graphic novels. Uh-huh. I describe them as because the experience is like seeing a movie, in that you're getting, except you're seeing a movie that doesn't have fist fights in it. Uh-huh. You know, you're not seeing a Steven Seagal action movie.
Are there fist fights in the Carter Family book? I don't think so.
No, there's...
Are there no fist fights with Stan Lee, like, while they fight with fists?
Nope, absolutely none of that.
Well, you must feel like you've let down a great comic tradition.
Yeah, we have. We've let down every 11-year-old in the world. But there are plenty of comics for them.
Uh-huh.
And, we just wanted to create...
I can picture 11-year-olds. Me as an 11-year-old would have loved this book.
There are sophisticated urbane with an 11-year-old.
Little 11-year-old pipes?
Yes.
Hanging on there? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't want to diss all the 11-year-olds in the world. I'm just, you know, the kids that just totally get into a good old Titanic, you know, Stan Lee-style slugfest.
Sure.
They're not.
And I can get into those. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to have other kinds of comics. I gave this talk at a bookseller's convention last fall, and this was in support of the Oregon Trail graphic novel that David and I did while we were waiting around to see what would happen with the Carter Family book. And I was introduced in front it's probably a crowd of about 300 people. I was introduced as the creator of a graphic novel, and then the woman said, "But of course, we all know that's just a fancy term for a comic book."
Uh huh. Did your ire get raised?
Yeah, I discarded the entire prepared speech I had.
Did you throw it into the air and have papers flying in all directions?
Oh, mentally.
Okay.
But I just got up there and I just felt like I can't let
that. Can't let that go?
So I said, what happened to comics would make more sense if you thought of it in terms of the literary world. What if in 1938, Random House had released a novel called Superman? It was a huge success, and for that reason, for the next 50 years, the only novels that were published were about muscular guys in tights uh-huh. defeating villains and hitting each other. Uh-huh. What if that was the only book you could find in the library, was, you know, either H.G. Wells' Outline of History or, you know, oh, here's the latest superhero novels.
Sure.
And I said, that's what happened to comics. They just, that particular genre just pushed almost everything else.
We're talking about comic books.
Comic books, yes. Now comics have relaxed out of that, and just as novels can be about anything, comics can be about anything, and they're actually very germane to where we're heading, because our society is becoming more visual. People still read, of course, but the combination of images and words it works a lot better now than it did half a century ago for most people. I think people read the neutered, gelded newspaper comics uh-huh. that exist.
Well, something that occurs to me, Frank, why did comic books come out the way they did when there's clearly far more prestige, or at least there was, far more prestige and money in the comic page tradition of trying to appeal to a wider audience with a broader span of interests and approaches? I mean, there were clearly more money and more prestige. To this day, there's more money and more prestige in even the lowliest newspaper comic strip.
Yeah, I mean, these people... Even Marmaduke has
Lauded with prestigious awards, and they have their own, you know, private jet planes. Why did comic books go off in that direction?
I think because the comic books were initially, they were an offshoot of the pulp magazines, which were, you know, if you bought a copy of Spicy Detective Stories, you were not going to get a William Faulkner novella in there.
Uh-huh.
It was coming out of that same place, and the motion picture serials. It was an offshoot of that kind of the penny dreadful, you know, going back to the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
In part, it's worth noting that when comics first started, they were almost exclusively reprints of newspaper material.
Oh, that's true.
And slowly, the superhero stuff pushed that out.
Did those guys make as much money as the? Sorry, I keep returning to money, but that's sort of a complaint.
Oh,
again,
yeah.
We're getting back to the question of why did, in this imaginary world where Random House published nothing but guys in tights, why did they hew to that and not move off to this other direction when it was clearly possible? It's always been possible. This is not a new development.
No. It was just, I think, just the publishers, you know, Action Comics number one kind of sealed the deal. That comic sold out.
Well, for the publishers, they did make a lot of money.
They
did very
did.
Well with
Yeah, they didn't share all that money with the creators.
With the creators, sure.
But that's the reason why there was a proliferation of superhero comics, because Superman was an instant sellout, you know, no pun intended. I mean, just this comic came out of nowhere. Action Comics number one, they had to go back and reprint it, which was very unusual for a newsstand comic
book. Oh, at the time.
Yes. And other publishers caught on. Everyone, it was about a year and a half where people were sort of timidly testing the water. And then by 1940, superheroes dominate. Even comics that were initially made up of reprints of newspaper features.
So
they would start pushing that stuff back further in the book, and there'd be less and less pages of Joe Palooka and the Bungle family
uh-huh.
and new, you know, usually primitive, raw stuff.
Why should it be that where the incentive was for the publisher to make a lot of money, output was juvenile and lacking any real depth, at least to some degree? It does have depth. Fletcher Hanks has depth but it's almost accidental depth. Well, but where the creator was in a position to have an incentive, as in newspaper comics, it took a slightly different course. Is there a real, I mean, is there something to be noticed there, or is that, what do you think?
I think it was just Superman happened, everybody scrambled to create an imitation. A lot of them stuck and became popular.
And plus, if you were a youngster, like the guys who drew the comics, it was fun.
Yes.
You liked drawing the hero and the misunderstood hero, fighting the criminal and having everything clear.
And, you know, there were other types of comics out there. There were comics that were licensed adaptations of animated cartoon characters.
Sure.
There were Western comics, even in the early 40s. There were
crime comics.
Crime comics started up in the early 40s.
Well, there were all sorts of things.
But the dominant thing, the thing that really, at least through World War II, that ruled the industry was the costumed hero.
Well, it still does.
Yes, it's that's never gone away. Romance comics have gone away. Western comics have gone away. There's a few what they call funny animal comics out there, but they're in the have been left in the dust of the costume type character. That just is an archetype that people that the Western world seemingly wants and needs, and it's a very limited thing. I mean, there's really only so far you can go with gaudily costumed guy with a secret identity.
I don't know. They seem to be plumbing ever deeper depths with every year.
Well, depths is, yes.
Or heights.
Whatever it may be. It seems like it's part of the fabric of...
Oh, it is. It's taken over the summer movies, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I would like to take this moment to urge everyone to boycott the Marvel summer movies, because they do not properly credit the people that created
that
the characters.
No kidding.
And the families are not getting any money from them.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Don't go see.
I'm sure Stan Lee is fattening his wallet.
Oh yeah.
But no mention of Jack Kirby. No mention of. I don't think Spider-Man's in this Avengers movie.
No, but those three Spider-Man movies that
they all credited.
Yeah, they
co-write at the beginning.
Yeah, Sam Raimi ones.
And I appreciated that.
I did too. And I thought they were the only ones of the batches of modern superhero movies that I thought had anything to them.
Uh-huh.
They have a certain charm. And naturally, Marvel has disavowed those.
Have they really?
They're going to do
a reboot is the term.
Yeah.
They've invented a new word for do-over, reboot.
Yep, reboot. And they did that with the Ang Lee movie of the Hulk, which was an interesting movie until Nick Nolte appeared in it.
Oh, I never saw it.
And it's if you ever see it, watch it until you first hear the.
Do they have a gay relationship, like in the mountains, and that Nick Nolte and the Hulk?
Oh yeah, I wish I could quit you.
Exactly.
I wish. No,
no, you can only.
But yeah, don't go see the Avengers, please.
You're judging a film without having seen it.
I'm merely saying this because if you go see the Avengers, you're peeing on the grave of Jack Kirby.
That's a bad image.
So you don't want to pee on the grave.
Now, it's sopping wet by this time,
mm-hmm.
though. It's sort of that horse has been ridden. That dog's been shot.
Yep, and made into stew, and then put back together into something that looks like a dog, and made into stew again, and then shot. They just shot the stew.
Oh, Jack.
And now there's just a rusty pan that's mostly bullet holes.
But Stan Lee is the hero.
Oh, yeah.
He's like the guy who said to Shakespeare, "Hey, Bill, why don't you do a story about these two kids that... That fall in love, you know, and then they had a bunch of crap happens to them, and then they kill each other."
Methinks this idea hath commercial possibility.
And then Shakespeare does it. Yeah, yes. I created that with Bill. I gave him the idea.
Stan Lee's Romeo and Juliet.
With help from Bill Bill S.
Yeah. With help from Baffling Bill S.
Baffling Bill S. Exactly. Well, maybe right. Who knows? I wasn't there. But that's certainly everything Stan Lee did with Ditko looks a hell of a lot like Steve Ditko's work. Everything Stan Lee did with Jack Kirby looks and reads a hell of a lot like everything else Jack Kirby ever did. which seems mighty suspicious to me.
Well, and it's been no secret that how those books were created. They even have a way of describing it, like Marvel style. It's where the artist sketches out a scenario. You know, basically just breaks it down into panel form and does everything but the dialoguing. Uh-huh. And then a usually notably less talented hand writes a dialogue.
Sure.
That in order to appreciate what the artist has done, you have to just kind of skim the dialogue
Exactly. Unless you're really into faux Shakespearean William Shatner-like soliloquies.
Yep, William Shatner reading the...
If this be bad story written.
Yes. Uh-huh. And lo, it shall be told.
Uh-huh.
And thus comes a challenge.
And lo is an important word.
Yeah.
Lo, they shalt still credit.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. If a man be mad.
Well, Stanley is a character. The world would be less rich if he weren't
around.
It's true.
It's
But, Jizo, that he should have been the one to become a millionaire.
Yes.
While Ditko struggles. Well, Ditko is well-loved, but he certainly didn't become a millionaire, I don't think.
No.
Enough of this stuff.
And I think he certainly was psychologically traumatized, if not by...
Well, who wouldn't be with a boss like Stan Lee, though?
But, you know, Stan Lee is not an embittered recluse.
Yeah, he's not a grouch. I mean, mm-hmm. there are things to like about the guy. He's one of the great comic book characters.
Yeah, he's like the Barker of comics.
Yes, you're right.
The carnival huckster of comics.
It's just, I grit my teeth every time somebody talks about...
Yeah, I do too.
Stan Lee's Spider-Man or Stan Lee's Fantastic Four. Anyway, that's another old horse that's been beaten to death.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, talking about Campbell's soups. They're just soup.
They're
just
soup, exactly. With assistance from SD.
Yeah. Stirring Steve B. And cooking Jack Kirby.
Uh-huh. Anything else to tell about the Carter family days? Coming out soon.
It's coming out in October.
It's beautiful. There's a preview copy of it out to reviewers right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really beautiful. It's on newsprint paper, which is a cool way to see it because it's not going to be on newsprint when it comes out.
Yeah, it's going to be on pretty nice, non-shiny paper stock.
That's very important, yeah.
Which with a good tooth and a good feel to it.
In other words, DC Archives isn't publishing it.
Right, exactly. We can say that name without any problem. Yeah, it's not going to have the annoying headlight glare as you read each page.
Exactly. It's easy on the eyes.
Yes.
Creamy, easy on the eyes.
And reasonably priced, too. I think the price is $24.95, which...
Includes a CD.
Yeah, and it's a hardbound book. So
that's great. That's going to be wonderful. So... this is going to be an all comic book issue because I've kept him in the back, Frank. But you know who's here, and he's here. I've had him back in the kitchen.
I was wondering.
That man that's been. Yeah, he was sitting back there.
Oh my goodness!
He's in town with his wife, who's attending some sort of cooking convention, and he had mentioned it. I correspond with him now and then.
You must have gotten the picture.
The thing that he attaches, his signature picture on his every email, is like 10 megabyte large picture.
It's this nice big Olin Mills. It has the gold Olin Mills stamp.
Exactly.
I've never known anyone else that did that.
It's his signature. It's his thing, his gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think he just thinks that's just the way that you do it.
Well, I guess I'll just step aside and let this great man take center stage.
Well, his world famous panelologist is the term he uses. And Mason, you can come in here.
Mason.
This is Frank Young.
Oh.
He's
pleased to meet you.
He's the John Stanley expert. I'm sure you've read his blog.
Oh, yeah.
Come over here by the microphone. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, this is panelologist Mason Moray, the curator of Panelogical Pantheon, an infamous blog that shines a spotlight on some of the great unsung masterpieces of the...
Well said, Bob.
Thanks. That's Jim. Jim's my name.
And this is Craig.
Frank.
Frank
Young. Frank.
Jim and Frank.
You want to write that down?
No, I just want to say it a few times. Jim and Frank.
This is your method for memorizing.
Jim and Frank. There,
Jim
I've got
and Frank.
It now.
Jim and Frank.
Jim and Frank. I've got
well,
it.
Welcome, Mr. Murray.
Well, thank you.
This Analogical is, Pantheon. It's on Blogger.
This is the first one of these
interviews, podcasts.
Podcasts, yes. First one of these I've done.
Hold that thought. Sorry, I'm being really careful because Frank and I recently recorded a one-hour podcast. We had a great time doing it, and when we stopped, it was gone.
Oh, dear.
So I'm stopping and saving this thing every 10 minutes or so.
You know, there's a story in the annals of panelology similar to that.
Here we go, folks.
It's a horrible thing. Even when I tell the story, as funny as it is, but you're aware of the great Reed Crandall.
Oh, sure.
Well, he was on
EC Comics virtuoso.
And before that, he worked for Quality Comics.
Oh, yeah, he did Blackhawk.
Blackhawk,
right? Yeah.
And he was, in fact, burning the midnight oil to meet a deadline on an issue of Military Comics.
Sure.
Where he had the cover story, a 16-page Blackhawk story.
Is he the only one of the Quality guys that move over to EC?
I believe he may be.
Wow, what a chunk of history he saw.
I don't think...
Two important phases in comic book history. He was involved in both of them. Nobody else was.
I think you're correct. My knowledge of the post-heroic era is spotty. I tend to focus on the Golden Era, 1937 through 1942.
And not just the Golden Era. Not just the... And not the well-known, highly praised versions. Your specialty...
It's the true pioneers of panelology.
Uh-huh.
But to return to my story, a gangster had put a supply of invisible ink in Reed Crandall's inkwell.
Yeah.
It was a type that would start to fade after a few hours.
Sure.
So this man had put this titanic effort into inking this Blackhawk story, page after page, doing it very quickly. And then in the morning, he discovered... that all the inks had faded.
Well, that's a kind of a grim joke for
his pencil. His pencils were still there, so he's able to reconstruct the story. But a certain...
Do you know who did this?
A fellow named John Guinta.
Uh-huh.
And I believe he lost a tooth because of this.
Lost a tooth. Rick Crandall hit him.
He hit him with a T-square.
Oh. Cartoonist weapon of choice.
And Crandall dutifully paid Guinta's dentist bills later, but it was...
You mean Guinta paid... No, Crandall paid... Okay, yeah.
He manned up, as they say.
Sure.
But his anger was righteous. Imagine such a prank. They, fortunately, Quality had an inventory story they could run, and Crandall was able to satisfactorily finish that piece using real ink that he monitored scrupulously.
I should think. No, there's nothing funny about that story.
I guess I suppose
it's a little
not.
Frightening.
I'm just saying because it is an analogy to what I hear happened with you.
Oh,
fellas.
It's exactly the same thing.
It's a terrible thing.
There was no one to hit, though.
No.
This is a technological.
It appears that the greatest pranksters of all are digital.
Ah, you can say that again. That's true.
It appears that I kid you, I wouldn't actually repeat it.
Uh-huh.
That was my attempt at a witticism. You invited me to repeat it, and
I
didn't.
Well, you certainly made the step into the digital age, bravely, head held high.
It was a challenge. I confess it, but there are still many things about this blogging that completely eluding.
I consider you one of the masters of blogging, one of the modern masters of blogging.
Oh, you flatter me, but thank you.
You have a blend of historical insight with a personal perspective. I've learned about you while I've learned about these hidden comic greats.
Well, I do try to. I feel that as a blogger, I have a responsibility to report what I do as well as what I observe.
Uh-huh.
So I try to give people a flavor just to... It's so easy to think of a panelologist as a crazy old man in a room full of comic
books.
It
is very easy to think of him in that way.
But I want to show people that I have a life as a restaurateur and family.
With your
man.
Wife, Dory. Dory's Diner. Who, you know, I hear a siren coming from the direction of the convention center.
Yes,
I'm worried. And she's at a cooking convention.
It's a... it's a recipe sharing seminar, and she may have gotten a little stubborn. She has her secrets that I understandably are jealously guarded. I worry she could have... Oh, dear. That could be one of 20 different recipes.
Someone tried to pilfer?
They goaded her into revealing the content. She's very touchy about that.
I can imagine. Well, let's hope that's not what that is.
I'll give her a call in a little bit.
Okay.
But I can't pull myself away from this microphone. The chance finally to address my wonderful
You should consider
public.
Doing a podcast on panelology. That's how you say it, right? Panelology.
Panelology. Yes, it's a clunky word, but the great Dr. Jerry Bales invented it.
Sure.
And I take it as gospel.
Medical doctor.
I never got to know him very well. We were sort of rivals. He
two superhero rivals.
One might say, yes.
Sure. What a great story that would make.
Yes. Because he had his sources and I had mine, and he, God rest his soul, the man was as great a scholar as the field of panelology will ever see.
Sure.
I consider myself really just a rank amateur in comparison to Dr. Bale.
You underestimate your contribution.
But, well, thank you, sir. But I had access to information that no one else did. I just happened to come of age as a panelologist in the mid to late 1960s.
Right place at the right time.
And I attended many of the early comic conventions where you could still find the creators from the golden era alive and reasonably well.
Name some names.
Well, Fred Guarnier.
Sure.
I tried to find Fletcher Hanks. I didn't realize...
Elusive.
He was long gone by then. Most recently, I was in contact with Bradley Colger, the creator of Nightshade.
Is that the fellow you kept in your house for a while?
Yes, that came to a bad end. But it was... I famously interviewed William Eisner.
William?
I believe it's very important to... one would not refer to The Old Man as the Sea as being by Ernie Hemingway.
No, you wouldn't.
And... Or Billy Boy Faulkner. These men, and it's true that
Stephen Ditko,
William Eisner,
John Kirby.
Although I go back and forth between referring to him as John and Jacob because
Jacob Kirby,
his
sure.
given name being Jacob Kurtzberg.
Okay, so
just William Eisner, who had
a sign of respect.
Yes, it is. It's a way of showing them that I take them and their work absolutely seriously.
Sure. Richard Corbin.
Well, I believe that's what he calls himself.
Okay.
He's a bit after my time.
I see.
I really lose interest in the doings of the comic magazine by about 1950.
Why do you think that is?
Because there is a certain unpredictability and vitality in the early works. Just as with Mr. Eisner, I favor his pioneering work on the magician feature Yarko the Great over the highly esteemed and, in my opinion, slightly overrated Spirit.
Zarko or Yarko?
Yarko.
Yarko.
Y-A-R-K-O, Yarko.
It's important to get details.
Yes. Without...
You consider this his primary achievement?
I consider it his greatest achievement because when one peruses a Yarko story... From panel to panel, one does not know what is going to happen.
He reinvents panelology with every new panel.
Well said, Bob. And the turn of page sometimes is like a rift in the universe. Whereas I admire...
Seeing the world anew.
Yes.
You know, comics take you to a place that, I think I've mentioned this before, no other medium can take you. It puts your brain...
And they're so portable. I have fond memories of I was combing the back roads of Iowa in the summer of 1964, and I had made a remarkable find in this farmhouse. It was a trunk that had, I think, 65 scattered issues of early Fox Feature Syndicate comics, mm-hmm. titles like Mystery Men and Wonder World. And I was driving a Chevrolet Corvair at the time that had some transmission trouble, and the blasted thing just ceased to exist in front of this florist shop. It just stopped on the highway. And I couldn't budge the thing, and I was terribly afraid a truck was going to come by and ram it.
It sounded like a crucial instance in an actual secret origin story.
Perhaps it was. I just realized I had to rescue those comics. And this was a formidable stack. I mean, see, you have some over here, you know. But I could carry 65 comic books with me with ease. And I sat under a tree. I bought a gallon of pink lemonade from a store and sat under a shade tree and enjoyed these comic books while I waited for a tow truck to come.
Oh, that sounds nice.
And I thought, one cannot do this with a painting or a movie. Of course, now one can. You have these iPads and iPods
sure.
and things that you can carry around in your pocket.
I can't see leaning on a tree holding up a large canvas, though.
No. Nor whipping out a film projector and reels. At the time, there, of course, books are portable, but you see, those are a constant. But I realized the comic magazine is the perfect medium for the projection of the imagination. It can be rolled up in the back of a child's pocket, put in a backpack, any folded, mutilated things.
A lot of folding and mutilating.
Well, a lot that happened to a lot of comic magazines. I, of course, scorn on such actions.
Wait, so you're against Crayola drawings in the margins, for instance, of comics?
I prefer that they be clean copies, but one has to realize these were mass circulation periodicals aimed at children. And
you can probably learn a lot about a culture by the scrawlings and margins and.
Particularly of World War II era comics.
Sure.
I have a treasured issue of Exciting Comics, which was published by the Nidor Company.
Comics weren't afraid to tell you the emotion you needed to feel while reading them, were they?
No, there was Exciting, Terrific, Slam Bang, Big Shot, Whiz.
Eerie.
There's Eerie, yes.
Kapow.
Sensation.
Yeah, things like that. Sure, Sensation. Yeah, of course.
That one is
Whiz pretty, always made me a little embarrassed.
That was, even in my childhood, a source of mirth.
Yeah.
They, you know, of course, we knew what that word meant. I don't think the fellows that made up that title had that same association.
Sure.
But as a child, when you said, I'm going to go take a whiz, it could have meant you were going to purchase a comic magazine or, well, I need not elaborate.
Sure. Something you could fold and spindle.
If one choose to do so. Even as a young child, I respected the comic magazine and.
So you didn't Crayola draw Crayolas?
No. I would, if I was so moved to recreate a scene, I would get a piece of onion skin typing paper from my father's den.
Who hasn't done that?
And attempt to copy the scene, of course, ineptly. And one realizes the limitations of the medium of crayon.
Yeah.
Almost immediately.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But this one issue of Exciting Comics, a child named Whitney Johnson, age 11.
He signed his work.
And his date dated it. Chose
people
to.
People don't. In adulthood, you don't write age 49 or age 62.
No, you tend
that,
to.
That helps nail down your. It helps as an identifier, though. You know, that's coming from the direction of the conference center. That's sort of concerning me.
I'm wondering. Yes, Dory may have. I told her to keep the recipe for butter explosion biscuits under wraps. It's a new thing.
Butter explosion.
It's biscuits that
explode. I hope not.
Well, they explode with flavor.
Ah, that's nice.
She has discovered a way of embedding.
Embedding. There's another sort of military-like word.
Well, she refrigerates the biscuit dough and then embeds it with. About a tablespoon of butter for each biscuit.
And holy mackerel.
And somehow it creates a pocket of butter inside.
So both
the
flavor and hearts will explode after the consumption of this.
Yes, and of course at the we're about to debut these at the diner, and we'll have an option of the sweet butter explosion biscuit, which is two of the biscuits with a container of maple syrup.
Oh, good grief!
It's quite good. I've been the test audience on a. Of course, I have to get on the Exercycle every time I have one of these. Dr. Willis is a. I've gotten some very stern scoldings.
Sure, sure.
My cholesterol and blood pressure.
Well, you're getting older. You've got to keep an eye on
things
like that.
Older and things, the system starts to run down a little bit.
Well, of course. But you may be getting older, but you're quickly, fast becoming a shining light in the comic book firmament. A very important, if unsung, genius. Yeah, I'll use the word. I'll use the word.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the books that you bring to light.
Well, as you may have intuited, I tend to shun the polluted flock, as that poet said.
Sure.
I have no interest in the bigger features,
popular features.
Popular, the things that...
You're Superman. You're Batman.
The first year or so of each of those features I liked, but it immediately lost that magic.
What changes?
The changes brought on by popularity.
Expectations.
Expectations were risen so much that, there is a very early Batman story that starts out with him driving around in the Batmobile and he gets lost.
I don't remember that
and
story.
And has to stop at this house to ask directions. Sure. What a sterling moment of reality.
Sure.
I mean, would not...
What Harvey Pekar would call neorealism.
It is. It is the first moment of neorealism. I mean, who among us has not driven and gotten lost?
Sure.
And, of course, in this period, GPS was just a science fictional dream.
Sure.
But imagine a superhero doing that now.
Knocking on your door.
Excuse me. I'm lost. I'm wearing a cape.
You didn't see that in the later issues.
No, they...
I'm lost. I'm wearing a cape.
Just a... Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It would be a surprising visitor.
Your position on capes, by the way.
I am inherently suspicious of any comic magazine hero who wears a cape.
Okay.
Because as one who attempted to don such things made of towels and bed sheets in my youth...
Who hasn't?
You're basically asking for injury.
Of course.
Those things can get caught on chairs, on doors, on stairways.
Or hook on, they're recipes for hanging.
Yes, and what man or woman in their right mind would choose to don such a thing and vigorously rush about fighting crime?
It makes a lot more sense to go capeless.
Yes, and it is no secret that my favorite creations of the panological realm, almost to a man and woman, lack the cape.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, Bob. What were we?
We were starting to talk about the books that you featured on your site.
Oh yes.
Hold on.
Hey guys, could you keep it down just a little bit? I'm just trying to sleep.
He's worn out, Mason. He just finished a major graphic novel.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to keep this down a little bit. Heaven knows I hate to lose my sleep. There are things that... Basically, the things that I look for in a panological story is this sense of what I call innocent innovation.
Sure.
These stories were created by kids, basically.
Boys, yeah.
Boys just old enough to enter the adult world.
Sure.
And for a brief, glorious period, they were, if not financially rewarded by having the fruits of their subconscious laid bare in public.
Sure.
In these stories.
Uh-huh.
The stories are often magical in their lack of structure, plot, characterization.
Or anything we might associate with merit or skill.
One, in the traditional critical sense, yes. Uh-huh. But how much more exciting, how much more vibrant and alive and heartfelt these...
Well, I won't say anything against that. That's
certainly
true.
These admittedly primitive creations are compared to the likes of the dull Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman,
uh-huh,
and the like. characters that are enforced by a strict series of rules that are governed and perhaps doomed by their own popularity to repeat the same formula over and over again. Basically, when you've read one Superman story post-1939, you've read them all. When you've read one Wonder Woman story, except for the manner of bondage in which one of the characters is placed, you've read them all.
Well, give an example of one of the heroes that you like who breaks this mold.
Well, of course, there is the great Yarko.
Sure. It's a magician, right? You've read one magician story.
Not in this case. These stories take surprising turns.
Yeah.
I believe I featured at least two of them on my blog. Uh-huh. They move in startling directions.
Yeah.
You're not guaranteed the same reading experience you are with, say,
always something fresh.
A Batman and Robin story. Uh-huh. Batman and Robin versus the Joker.
Sure.
You know that the Joker is going to terrify Gotham City.
Uh-huh.
Oh, dear.
The microphone. That's all right.
I'll repeat myself.
Okay.
You know that the Joker is going to terrify Gotham City.
Sure.
Batman and Robin are going to go after him. He's going to thwart them. They'll catch him in the end. You know he's going to get caught.
It's the formula.
You don't know in the early works of William Eisner, the works of Fletcher Hanks, there's so many that come to mind. Characters like Cosmic Carson, Wiz Wilson.
Sure.
The strong
There's
man.
Wiz again.
Yes, it was just part of the fabric of the society. You read these stories, and as I said earlier, from panel to panel, anything can happen.
Yeah.
It can come.
It's exciting. That's exciting.
It is. It's the revelations of a young mind. I hope I'm not getting too intellectual on
you.
No,
this is
Bob,
because I don't riveting, wanna, scintillating.
Because I tone this down even on the blog. Perhaps I should get more into it because
You do. You have the exact perfect measure of.
I do approach these things with the intellect as well as the heart.
Sure.
Not for me is mere nostalgia.
No.
Oohing and aahing over the likes of the Black Terror or Ibis the Invincible is not for me. It's a sense of a true sense of wonder in these seemingly primitive,
goggle-eyed, mouth agape.
Yes, that is the moment that I know that I have a story suitable for posting. I go into the new pantheon.
Uh-huh. This is the one in a U-storied building, right?
Yes,
as opposed to the old pantheon, which was a tin shed.
Yes,
behind your house.
I am so fortunate that they pulled that prank. They pulled that prank on me where they hid my comics for a while.
You told all about that in your blog.
But one of the best things.
By the way, folks, if you read Mason's blog, I suggest you go to the archives, go to the very first one, read through that. When you get to the bottom, you'll see a next button. Press that, and that way you can read them consecutively as they were written. And they tell a nice, continuous story.
Well, it's true. It's a tell about the town I live in,
sure.
Which I've gotten a lot of pressure to disclose exactly where I live. And to be honest, I'm uncomfortable doing that. Because
we need privacy.
And I guess I don't want to be hounded by comic scholars. I welcome giving a helping hand under request, but
sure.
I don't want to have...
Well, you have your own life to live.
I do, and it's a life as...
It's almost like a superhero's life.
It is true, Bob. I have two sides. I have I am the face of Dory's Diner. I am the impresario there. I balance the books. I run the register.
But you retreat to your lair.
Yes, the new pantheon. It is rather my fortress of solitude.
Uh-huh.
Literally so, since my dear wife has an allergy to the mold.
Oh, that's regrettable.
The mold and decay that's contained in old pulp paper.
It's ambrosia.
Part of the pleasure of enjoying a rare Golden Age comic is to open it up to the center, lift up to the nose, and...
Oh, like a rare wine.
I can tell you, you could blindfold me and hold up comics. I could tell you what the imprimatur is.
That's very impressive.
There's a certain tang to a fiction house title, an insouciance to an early timely. Oh, a lovely, lovely...
Bouquet
to the Fox Features magazine. Oh, it's... And the creamy, sort of vanilla-y scent of a quality comic.
Oh, yes.
Is a thing.
You're preaching to the choir here, friend.
But unfortunately, to my dear wife, I cannot have the things in the house because it sets her off on a sneezing
fit.
So
it's a small windowless room in a...
It's air conditioned. It's climate controlled. Uh-huh. And
very important.
I've set it up very much as an extension of my den in the house. There's a comfortable recliner. There's three recliners. My good friend Austin Spinkle, who loves to go by the...
Senior. His name is Senior.
His name is Spark Spinkle.
Spark.
There is a person in our town called Super Senior.
You have your own superhero.
Yes, we do.
As earlier today, Mr. Murray and I walked around downtown Seattle with each other.
Oh, we went to Patriot Square.
And had, it's Pioneer Square.
Oh.
And we were thrilled to see one of Seattle's own superheroes walking up and down the street.
Oh, 'twas a thrill indeed. What, his name was the Vindicator?
Something like that.
Yeah. He was in broad daylight.
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Molded styrofoam pectorals.
And a hood that looked scratchy.
A little scratchy. He looked slightly uncomfortable. But do you notice the Seattleites were applauding him as he walked down the street?
And I noticed...
Applauding and laughing merrily.
And he did a terrific favor. There was a man that was putting coins into a Sunday newspaper machine and attempting to remove multiple copies. And this masked avenger caught him and told him, one copy per customer.
Huh.
And pointed to the machine and the man...
Did he use his spray? Our superheroes are master marksmen of
just as our
pepper spray.
Well, our super senior,
Sparks.
Yes, I suppose we should just let the.
Let me say spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Before we get there, you have to do that now. If for instance you're going to say Bruce Wayne is Batman, you have to say ahead of time. Spoiler alert. So just remember that as we're speaking, and we'll be fine.
Add this to my everyday lexicon.
Oh, like, you really should.
Spoiler alert, I think I'll have a sandwich. Spoiler alert, I'm going to take a sponge bath.
Exactly.
I could have a terrific time.
Yeah, well, you don't want to overuse the phrase.
That's true. But yes, our super senior uses sprays. He was using Easy Off oven cleaner and Windex, but I've talked sense into him. And as I say on the blog...
It's a small town, so it's a less fierce grade of criminal, too, I'm guessing.
We generally go out for a crime
patrol. A vigorous scrubbing with Windex.
Is terrible. So I purchased these animal training products at a pet store.
Sure.
One is called Kitty On, the other is called Puppy Oh No.
Uh-huh.
And they're bitter as a... Bitter,
an unpleasant sensation.
Unpleasantly bitter and acidic, but they're very effective. We found a fellow trying to short a parking meter the other night, Super Senior.
A lot of coin operated crimes that
most
are
of the
being righted.
Most of the crimes are coin operated. There was a soda machine in front of the Thriftway on Highway 12 that, if you hit it just right, you could get two cans for the price of one.
Uh-huh.
Needless to say, that has come to an end thanks to Super Senior.
Super Senior. You actually are the Cato to Super Senior in some ways.
Yes, I have chosen to be a chauffeur simply to keep the poor man from getting in a scrape, because while he is a costume crime fighter, he is also elderly and no match for a younger thug. And he, bless his heart, he, spoiler alert, has a bit of a tongue in his mouth and can get a bit carried away. So
he gets angry.
I am a bit of a...
you soothe things.
I'm a leavening.
A leavening factor.
So we take a trip around. I have an egg timer in the car that I turn to 15 minutes. And as soon as it goes ping, we go back home.
Oh, so it's timed vigilantism.
Because we don't want to be out all night.
Well, who would?
And I tend to really want to go to bed about midnight, because got to get my beauty rest.
Sure.
But we've caught jaywalkers. He gave a stern lecture to a hitchhiker.
Not angry, certainly, just concerned.
Just concerned that he was imperiling himself.
So in many ways, Super Senior is just a senior, sort of a grouchy senior who walks around town giving people a piece of his mind.
When he sees fit.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell him about the this fellow we saw this afternoon. I think he could learn some from his techniques. But I thought it was terrific that your fair town has
Seattle is on the vanguard. We're leading the way, although we have a supervillain now. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Heavens,
no. He's just turned up on the scene. I don't want to give him, you know, send any special spotlight on him, but he's there.
Goodness.
And it has all of us a little rattled. So,
well, one thing you must admit, it takes great courage to appear in public in a skin-tight costume.
Oh, it takes a tremendous courage. That is the core of the heroic and superhero. Mm-hmm.
Is to go out in public wearing those things.
Sure, sure. Do you know of any superheroes who had a secret identity? Who had a secret identity? Who had a secret identity?
Hmm. Let's think. Was that true of the Red Bee? No. He was a mild-mannered druggist. How about the Black Terror? No, he was a mild-mannered druggist.
It just goes down one level, doesn't it?
Our man? No, he was a mild-mannered druggist.
They're all mild-mannered. And druggists, too. This reminds me of, doesn't your wife Dottie do a...
Dory
do
Bob.
She does a some sort of a layered pie thing that made me think of this.
Oh, the four-in-one pie.
Four-in-one pie.
Oh, Bob, I would love to have you come over to Thanksgiving dinner.
I would love to do it. That's Jim, by the way.
Oh, Jim. Why do I keep saying Bob?
I don't know.
You remind me of a Bob that I knew in accounting school. But, yes, let me describe this pie. I've described it on the blog, but this will bring in some business to the diner.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine an ordinary-seeming pie. Or is it? Its outer layer...
You could write that. It could be the menu description.
That is, precisely, it's a seasonal pie because mm-hmm. it's rather difficult to make. The outer edge of the pie is, let's say, your typical cherry pie. Baked inside of it is a slightly smaller Dutch apple pie.
Sure.
Baked inside of that pie is a slightly smaller custard pie. And baked inside of that is a tiny mince pie.
Does each have its own little tin aluminum pan?
No, we had to... the first couple we made had those, and we had some hospital problems.
I should think.
Fortunately, no lawsuits.
You learn with experience.
Yeah. But Dory has perfected this pie now, and to cut a slice is to gaze and wonder at layer upon layer upon layer of flavor.
Not unlike the great classic comics that you revere.
Yes, it is. It is.
It's like cutting into a...
Classic Golden Age comic magazine.
Sure. Layer upon layer.
So it might be called panelological pie.
I think you're right.
Of course, people would have a hard time. I seem to be the only man on the planet that can properly say that word, panelological.
Oh, you're leading. You're like a...
A man has a duty, you see, and I recognize...
A vision.
I recognize from an early age my first fascination with these luridly colored pamphlets.
Sure, sure.
That it was my destiny to save these things from extinction. But friends, we must not let these gaudily colored costumed adventurers fade into the horizon of popular culture. We must celebrate their uniqueness, their humanity, the awkward joy they bring to us as we read their... fading four-colored adventures.
Sure.
You can have your Captain America, your Superman, your Batman, but a wonder like the Red Bee or the Hood or the Blazing Turtle, these are the true riches. Oh, dear.
That is the convention. That's the direction of the convention, sir.
You know, it would be just like her to... Oh, goodness. I know I worry needlessly, but she gets so touchy about her recipes.
I would be worried about this.
Yeah, she could have started a riot.
Or a mass poisoning.
Oh, she wouldn't. She's far too conscientious for that.
I don't mean she would have done it.
Oh, one of her rivals.
Rivals.
Because in a way, the restaurateurs are like superheroes and supervillains.
I can see that.
There's a tremendous rivalry and suspicion, jealousy, dwelling on... The recipe.
Past wrongs,
and wanting recipes. Oh, it just
like secret identities. Recipes are like secret identities.
They are. They're the secret identities of any restaurant,
of any food stuff.
And 'twas really something to see the other women at this. I was the only man at this event, quite surprisingly. So I had a certain cachet.
Oh.
But to hear these women innocuously attempt to wheedle recipes out of each other.
Like Lois Lane.
Yes, trying to find out if Clark Kent really is Superman.
Spoiler alert,
yes. Well, there should have been plenty of spoiler alerts at this thing. I had to make myself a human cordon to keep Dory at bay.
Cordon bleu.
I suppose so. I am wearing a nice shade of it today. But
We've actually gone over our time here, Mr. Moray.
Well, I
want to thank you very much for visiting us here today.
Oh, my pleasure. I could have continued.
Can you come back sometime?
I'd love to. And you're welcome to come. I'll disclose our address to you. You're welcome, as long as you keep that
honored.
A secret.
I'm honored, sir.
You'd be welcome to come to Thanksgiving.
If I do reveal it, I'll be sure and say spoiler alert ahead of time.
Well, please do.
And, you know, Frank is really, he's just exhausted, so any time you want to come up here and while he's recovering, you're certainly welcome.
Well, any panelologist is a friend of mine.
You consider me a panelologist. I take that as the highest compliment.
Yes.
Thank
you,
sir.
And this fellow here, too, he's a... Mm-hmm. Anyone that's exhausted by creating comics is...
Squeezed dry.
Is a true patriot. Well, I'd like to use your restroom and then your telephone, if I may.
That sounds like a superhero exit line.
Just got to check on the little missus, you know, make sure that...
Well, you get right to it. I'm sure she's fine.
Which way is the...
Just down that hall there.
All right.
When criminals in this world appear and break the laws that they should fear and frighten all who see or hear, the cry goes up both far and near for underdog.
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 Speed of lightning, roar of thunder, fighting all who rob or plunder. Underdog. In this world, the headlines read of those whose hearts are filled with greed, who rob and steal from those who need to right this wrong with blinding speed. Goes underdog,
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 speed of lightning, roar of thunder.